The latest edition of the online Issues Etc. Journal is out. It contains an article I've written titled Legalism and License. How are these two really the same error? Find out with the latest Issues Etc. Journal. You can also read about Pastor Brian Wolfmiller's journey from liberal Lutheranism and navel-gazing evangelicalism to the external promises of God in Holy Scripture. Get your copy of the latest Issues Etc. Journal by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org.
They swore a pact to the devil. They said, "We will serve you if you'll get us free from the French." The devil said, "Okay, it's a deal." And they kicked the French out. But ever since, they have been cursed by one thing after the other.
You're dealing with a God who, judicially speaking, is a little crazy. This is like night court. He's just going and dismissing cases left and right.
What role does faith play in your life right now?
It's everything. It's everything. I mean, I grew up as a preacher's son. My father was a preacher for 50 years. Calling myself a God-fearing man, I got to read this book.
I guess you could say I got a little out of control. I dropped 400 grand on a bar mitzvah for my son. He's 9! And we're Lutherans!
I always feel a little bit unprepared going into Friday afternoon shows, and I do not know why. I mean, I've been here preparing for hours. All three of us have, and for some reason, I always feel like slightly out of sorts. I do not know why, and especially since the first hour is mostly Jeff. I mean, it's all on him. The entire onus for how the first hour goes, the burden of the entire show rides on Jeff's shoulders. He's the one who has to make sure that it happens. I just sit here and respond to email. He's the one who has to do the hard work and read the email and make sure that, do we have any, I think we do have something from the comment line today. Do we? I think we do. He has to make sure that happens. Craig is there to help him and make sure everything runs smoothly in a technical sense. But, I mean, really, I don't know why I would be in the least worried about this first hour on Fridays, because it's pretty much Jeff from beginning to end. So, I mean, except for Blog of the Week, and even then he has half of that too. So I should just calm down. I should just be at ease here and let the master do his job.
It's all he needs is more pressure. Thanks, Todd.
Do I see beads of sweat forming on his furrowed brow? No, he's cool as a cucumber. He pretends to be worried about going on mic. He does. He'll tell everybody whenever they talk to him about being on the air. Why aren't you on the air more? Oh, I hate being on the air. I don't like being on the mic. He tells us that he stays up late at night on Thursday nights. Gets up really early Thursday mornings. So worried about the time he has to spend on the microphone. It's all a complete act. What I'm waiting to see are the, and I know these exist someplace, Craig, there's got to be some old beta or VHS tapes of Jeff during his brief stint as, it wasn't a weatherman, it was probably a sportscaster, in Arizona, New Mexico. Where was it, Jeff? All I know is I've heard the story about you driving through Texas to get there.
No, I was offered a job in Roswell, New Mexico.
Roswell,
I went there,
New Mexico.
And turned around. I declined the job.
Oh, wait a minute. You didn't even get in front of the camera once.
No.
Are there
no.
old tapes of you doing local stuff in Columbia, Missouri?
Yes, for KOMU. It's the only, at the time, it's the only school in the country that had a commercial TV station, commercial, an NBC-affiliated TV station in the entire country. Number one by far in news ratings. And yeah, I was a weekend sports anchor. And the anchors are all paid people, and then the students do like a lot of the reporting.
So it was akin to you were actually an anchor. You had a paid position with them?
Yeah. After I graduated, I had a paid position. I was, you know.
Gotta see these days.
But it was like a grad assistantship kind of thing.
We saw a picture. We found a picture. It may have been on Facebook. From one of Jeff's old friends, of Jeff standing on a beach in California with a couple of his buddies. Craig, what was it about that picture? Remember we found that picture of Jeff with the sunglasses on, and he had like a flock of seagulls haircut going on. Do you remember that?
His hair kind of, it looked like the snowdrift that was outside my door the last time that, we had snow here.
If I remember, it was like a cross between Flock of Seagulls and mullet.
Yeah, it just kind of went straight out and then straight up. You know, it was kind of like 80s hair. You know?
How old were you in that picture, Jeff? Like, you were probably 20.
I think I just graduated college, I think.
All right, so this is what I want to see. I want to see these tapes. They have to exist someplace. And in the age of the internet, they can be put on YouTube very easily. I would like a permanent link from my Facebook page to these tapes on YouTube of Jeff doing sports in Columbia during his college days. I would just absolutely, that would be, I'd watch it as much as I watch anything else. I mean, my latest one to watch is, Kitten Gets a Risky Bath. Sounds kind of dirty, but it isn't. And it's very cute. But I would replace it happily with old footage of Jeff doing sports there in Columbia, Missouri. Yeah, that would be great. Do you think they have them on file there? Do they keep that kind of stuff?
No, I've got some at home.
You do?
Yes.
Well,
I've got
this will be very easy then.
No,
yeah,
they're not going
this
anywhere.
Is
going
to be easy. And see, Jeff's wife is a video whiz. She should be able to provide these on YouTube with no. She could take it from tape onto a digital format just with the blink of an eye. That is what I'm going to call her about tonight. I'm going to call her tonight and ask her to post those on YouTube because I must see them. I don't know how
you'll
I got
be disappointed.
That.
You'll be very disappointed.
Before
I also, I've got plenty of tapes of my Sports with Shorts radio program.
Oh, you do?
Oh, lots
I'd
of
love to hear
of those.
That.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear that. You
yeah.
kept those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I had a demo tape. My demo tape for after I graduated college for TV, and I remember something. I knew nothing about NASCAR, and there was some guy racer named like Jeff Bodine or something. People are probably NASCAR people are just hating me right now. So they didn't provide the pronunciation of the last name. So I'm thinking of Jeff like the Clampets.
Bodine.
So I make some Clampets quip, you know, try to be funny, you know, Clampets quip about this Jeff Bodine, and didn't get many phone calls or turn from like Charlotte, North Carolina's TV stations and things like that. So that was
so
a bad
actually,
thing. I had to edit that demo tape.
You made a demo tape. You sent it out to markets all over the country.
Yeah.
And,
and
then
it
was Roswell,
major
New
faux
Mexico.
Pas, a major faux pas. Yeah, I go Roswell, New Mexico. That was, man, oh, man. Maybe we have some listeners in Roswell, New Mexico.
I won't
say anything, but it was quite an adjustment.
Hey, before we get started, you guys know I love my sandwiches, and I've been in the past extremely loyal to the sandwiches that I eat almost every day. Craig gets to watch me. Craig and Jeff, they bring food from home. Jeff's wife packs him a little lunch. It's all nicely wrapped up in wax paper, just like when you were in the third grade. He's got a little thermos, a little lunchbox, all those kind of things. And he comes dressed. His wife dresses him every day. And of course, Craig is a bachelor, so he brings whatever Ma has cooked in the last week, sometimes 2 weeks ago. You know, he stretches it.
Beth does my hair too, but
I know man, we
you
can
forgot
tell.
About that.
And but I go and I eat my sandwiches. I had a sandwich last night. I was telling Craig about this, that very closely, if not surpasses, it closely rivals surpasses the best sandwich I ever ate. And it was, and I just have to. It's just one of those kind of things. When you have a sandwich like that, that so satisfies you, you remember it. You think about it. It was a Baja chicken from Quiznos, and it was delicious. And it was also free because they're having their grand opening today down in Columbia. So we got listeners down in Columbia, Waterloo, who are hungry for a sandwich that even surpasses the best sandwich I ever ate, which is hard to do. The Quiznos in Columbia having their big grand opening today. Go eat. And I know Craig would, but he's so frugal, he wouldn't drive down there. No.
Insert disclaimer here. Emma, his daughter, works at Quiznos.
Well.
No bias.
No bias whatsoever. But she did not make me the sandwich. I don't think. No, she was at the register. So grand opening down there. Delicious sandwiches. The Baja chicken. If you want to know what Wilkin eats, then.
Are they like, you know, Quiznos in Waterloo? That's a big deal. I mean, they like closing, shutting streets down, ticker tape parade. I mean, this is a big ordeal for Waterloo.
Well, it's Waterloo and Columbia. You have not been down there lately, have you?
Well, I hear good things about Columbia.
We're not.
I hear
we're
lots
not,
of good things
we're
about
not
Columbia.
Big city like, you know, Edwardsville. We don't have those acres and acres of trailer parks with people who have three or four teeth. We don't have that, but We're not quite there yet.
You talking about my neighbors? Don't talk about my neighbors like that. They're good people.
All I know is anytime I ever see any news footage, local news footage out of Edwardsville, it's always during a time when there's a flash flood, and it's always people standing outside their flooded trailers, and they're always in need of dental work, every single one of them. And this is the picture that the entire Midwest gets of Edwardsville, Illinois. I'll just say in Waterloo, we have all our teeth, or at least most of us have most of our teeth. All right, email.
All right, here's John. Hello from an Issues Etc. listener and Massachusetts resident. Regarding Emily Belts' assessment of World Magazine that maybe after the Massachusetts Senate race, the GOP might think it's politically advantageous to run pro-choice candidates, I don't think that would be a reasonable interpretation on the part of the GOP, since Massachusetts is a very specific demographic where it is advantageous here politically to be somewhat pro-choice as a Republican. I doubt this is the same nearly anywhere else, especially after seeing what happened in the New York 23 House race when the GOP nominated a pro-choice candidate. This doesn't, in my mind, justify running pro-choice candidates, even in Massachusetts, but in the left-hand kingdom, we work for the best that we can get sometimes. If our nation repents of its ways on abortion, it is only the gospel that will make it possible. Thanks for the email, and thanks for listening, John, in Massachusetts.
Well, I don't think that Emily Belts was advocating for kind of a nationwide running of pro-choice candidates, but it is a bit of a, well, it's interesting that the Republican Party is counting this as a really big victory for conservatism when on, I think, both of the big social moral issues, gay marriage.
No, Brown was against gay marriage.
But he's for same-sex unions.
I don't know about that.
I think he takes the Barack Obama position.
I don't know.
And he's pro-choice. He opposes federal funding for abortion, but he's pro-choice in other respects. I think it's just odd that the Republican Party would count this as a big victory. Obviously, those two issues for the National Republican Party are not that big of a deal. Again, kind of highlighting the difference between fiscal conservatives and social moral conservatives. But I think you're right. I think it's a unique case to Massachusetts or to the Northeast. Probably wouldn't work elsewhere. Maybe out in California. Well, definitely out in California. They got all sorts of pro-choice Republicans out there. We'll be right back. Why don't you hit me?
If you're interested in hanging around with a bunch of powerful men that further one another's careers, I guess you could meet Fred and Barney down at the Loyal Order of Water Buffalo. Stress is your problem, and those 40, 50 hours a week are killing you, and that cubicle's driving you nuts. Perhaps you should buy Joel Osteen's book and read it. If you're interested in Lutheran doctrine and practice and how we can spread that to our communities, check us out, Brothers of John the Steadfast, www.steadfastlutherans.com.
If you're a pastor or layperson in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, we have some timely resources for you. The leadership of the LCMS is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. You'll find show transcripts about these proposed changes and an updated list of questions for President Gerald Kishnick's task force. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Listen on Demand.
No Sonatocrats allowed. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen on Demand page and click Share This.
I've thought about us for a long time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You know what I completely forgot to do? I completely forgot to give the lineup. We just blew completely through the lineup and the phone numbers and everything else. There goes the format. It's listener email here for the first part of this hour. Issues Etc. blog of the week at the end of the first hour today. And then on this Friday afternoon, January the 22nd, it is the 37th anniversary of the passage of Roe v. Wade legalizing abortion in the United States. We'll get a live update from today's March for Life in Washington, D.C. Maggie Carner will join us live from D.C. Dr. Hadley Arkus will join us after that. We'll answer the question, was Roe v. Wade good law? Get a legal perspective on 37 years of legalized abortion in the United States. And then Pastor Matt Harrison will join us. A live update from Haiti on relief efforts there. He's down on the streets in Haiti. In the very last half hour of the program, as usual, Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We have four pieces of Issues Etc. audio. We will play them for you, and you get to call and vote for your pick for soundbite of the week. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Email us talkback at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. Here's a comment from the Issues Etc. comment line, Lincoln, Nebraska.
I was listening to the listener email segment from last Friday where it was mentioned that Pastor Wilkin is a fan of puppets. An idea came bursting into my head. Official, homemade, Issues Etc., Todd, Jeff, and Craig puppets for sale soon at issuesetc.org. Who wouldn't want to own their own Issues Etc. puppets? I foresee many uses. A collector's item, toy for the kids, or dog if you prefer. And best of all, a conversation starter to plug your favorite radio show. I'm so excited, I can't wait to place my own pre-order. Well, take care, God bless, and keep up the good work.
And thank you. It's a great idea. It's a fantastic, you know, the best thing about sock puppets is that if you run out of socks, you can wear them. The buttons are a little uncomfortable in your shoes, but no problem. That's the best thing. They are they do double duty, entertainment and, if necessary, ordinary socks. It's just fantastic. Oh, if you go to my Facebook page right now, you'll see my favorite picture of a sock puppet. It's the one that I think looks most like me. I mean, if you're going to start a brand of sock puppets depicting me and Jeff and Craig, you could start with this one.
What kind of attire would you be wearing in your sock puppet?
Sock puppets don't wear clothes. In my book, I'm a sock puppet purist. Buttons for eyes or those little googly eyes, maybe a few strings of yarn for hair, and nothing else. No more features. No noses. You have a mouth, eyes, and hair. No clothes. They don't even need arms. Sock puppets. I'm a sock puppet purist.
Okay, then. Here's an email from Chuck. Just listened to your episode commenting on the typical current American evangelical use of 2 Chronicles 7, verse 14. I would tend to want to analyze it covenantally. It's coming out of a very specific, unique, and special national situation, the ancient Israelite theocracy. As you say, you really can't just willy-nilly apply that to any modern nation. You might want to also comment sometime on Jeremiah 29, verse 11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, for wholeness and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. Similar to the verse from Chronicles, I see and hear this often ripped out of context, often claimed as an individual life verse. This is the prophet giving a word of hope to the first group of exiles in Babylon. At the same time, he's telling the people around him, it's over, you're doomed. You'll be buzzard food because there will be no one to bury you. I don't see anyone claiming Isaiah 57 verse 21 or putting on a Bible covers or bookmarks. There is no peace, says my God, for the wicked. What a downer. I'm out here in evangelicalism. I hear this stuff all the time. I can come up with a bunch of suggestions. For instance, there's Proverbs 28 verse 18a. Where there is no vision, the people perish. I hear this quoted in support of various vision statements. Curiously, this is the only time you hear a verse quoted from the Old King James. Other translations make it clear that what's being spoken of is the prophetic vision, the word from God from an authentic prophet. Thanks for the email, Chuck.
Yeah, the next time you hear your pastor quote that passage, without a vision, the people perish, as a club to beat you over the head, basically he's telling you, usually when that is quoted, and he wants to push his vision. He's telling you, if you oppose my ideas about what we're supposed to do at this church, you're opposing God. That's a pretty bold claim. And if you ask me, that's tyrannical.
for a pastor to say, if you oppose my ideas, my vision, then you're opposing God. I mean, that's the height of tyranny. And he does it quoting a Bible passage. You see, the devil loves to quote Bible passages. He likes to mess things up in the church. He likes to get people, get their eyes and their hearts turned away from the central thing, which is Jesus Christ, onto our own visions and ideas. And he loves to convince us that our own visions and ideas are the make it or break it thing for the church. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, I've mentioned this often on the air, Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote many years ago, God hates visionary dreamers because they set up an idol for themselves and everyone else about what the church is supposed to be. He says they love their idea of the community more than the community itself. And then when their dream does not come true for the community, they blame first the people, then themselves, and then finally God. So the next time your pastor quotes that passage, ask him what his vision is, and then just ask him flat out, are you telling me that if I oppose your bright ideas about the future of this congregation, that I'm opposing God? If he says, well, no, I don't mean that, then stop quoting that Bible passage, pastor. There's a way of reading the Bible that like individual verses were somehow printed inside a Hallmark greeting card. And that's what we get a lot of times with these evangelical proof texts. Those are two good suggestions, by the way, Jeff. We ought to do that vision one. We ought to do the one on a future and a hope as well, because these are quoted completely out of context. It's a greeting card way of reading the Bible. You take a passage out of its historical and its textual context, and it's like you just stuck it inside a greeting card. It can mean whatever you want it to mean, depending on the circumstance. And that is not the way we're instructed to read the Bible.
Hallmark theology, huh?
Yeah, it's Hallmark interpretation, and it's sloppy interpretation. It doesn't sit down and do the hard work of trying to figure out what the passage means in its original context and how it points us to Christ and all of those things. It just pulls it up out of the pages of the Bible and says, waves it around saying, I'm going to do whatever I want to with this Bible passage. It is exactly what Paul means when he condemns those who wrongly handle the word of truth.
Perhaps the next Wilken Journal article, Hallmark exegesis. What do you think?
That's a pretty good idea, actually. Although I'm working on the outline I can't even remember what it is, for something else. I'll put it in the hopper. Of course, at the rate I write, that could be years from now.
Here's an email from Kevin. I just finished listening to the interview with Pastor Ernie Lassman concerning the influence of the church growth movement on Lutheran worship. Like you seem to be, I was impressed with the assessment he delivered. As a pastor who at one time dabbled in contemporary style worship, I've since repented. It's interesting. We still sing with guitars, no drums, but it's hymns that are sung. The comments I get from the congregation are along the lines of, why don't we sing these beautiful hymns more often? My response, we do. The instrumentation is a little different, though. What soured me on contemporary Christian music was this. I'm very picky about which words are used by composers in their songs. Coming across songs that had good sounds and were singable, I was faced with changing lyrics way too often because the original lyrics were either theologically vacuous or did not confess sound doctrine. At the heart of the difficulty most of the time was a clear confession of the real presence and a leaning toward decision theology. There were also a number of songs which said absolutely nothing. There has to be a basic understanding of Christian worship. It has two dimensions. God speaks and we respond. We can do nothing except respond. Thus, everything we do in a worship service is a confession of one thing or another. Even the hymns fall under this guidance. The music is supposed to be instructive in the faith and in our confession of it. Each part of the liturgy makes a confession. It's not we've always done it this way, as much as there's a reason for doing it this way. Pastor Lassman's interview and paper should motivate pastors to instruct their congregations positively in the meaning of worship. As an aside, a sainted pastor who was a member of our church several years ago once called many of the contemporary Christian songs 7-Eleven songs. You sing the same words 11 times. Thanks for the email, Kevin.
I heard a song this morning. It's actually playing on our former employer's airwaves. I heard a song this morning that for all the world could have been written a man writing a love ballad to his wife. Talk about walking together, holding my hand, resting my head upon your shoulder, all this kind of stuff. And then every once in a while, we'll kind of toss in a God or Jesus. I don't even think it tossed in a Jesus, just tossed in a God. And that is supposed to pass for Christian music, and in many, many churches, it's supposed to pass for Christian worship. Look, when you can take the word God or Jesus out of the song and put in Mary or Sarah or whatever name you want to put in there, and it still makes just as much sense, you have a serious, serious problem. Our music ought to sound with the vocabulary of Scripture, and it ought to be explicitly Christian. Not like, and what was that song in the 70s? Debbie Boone, You Light Up My Life. And remember how Christians just giggled and got themselves all a Twitter because it was passing as a love song in secular music markets when it was originally written by Debbie Boone to God. And Christians thought that was so neat. And the problem is they've been pulling off that little trick until we're just completely tired of it again and again and again, until we have reduced Jesus to our kind of sad and needy boyfriend. When Jesus comes off in the music of your church like a sad and needy boyfriend, it's time to change the music of your church. Yeah, a little change. How about a change back to Jesus, his cross, his salvation, the Jesus of the Bible in your church's music? Stay tuned. More email after this. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Real Reformation Radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
37 years ago today, the U.S. Supreme Court announced two companion court cases, Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton. Between them, they legalized abortion on demand throughout pregnancy for any reason. Since then, it's estimated over 54 million babies have died in abortion mills throughout the nation. Hardcore feminists have celebrated, while a nation mourns the deaths of so many innocent preborn children. And babies haven't been the only victims. Women have often suffered from serious physical complications. Many have paid with their lives. Millions of mothers and fathers of aborted children have been emotionally devastated by what some politicians and pro-abortion activists glibly call a freedom to choose. Let's remember all the victims of abortion and pray the killing ends.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going through listener email on this Friday afternoon, the 22nd of January. In a little bit, we'll pick our blog picks of the week. Then we'll spend the second hour talking about the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. First, we'll talk with Maggie Carner. She is in D.C. for the March for Life. We'll get an update on how that went. Hadley Arkus will join us, author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. We'll ask and answer whether or not Roe v. Wade was and is good law. Pastor Matt Harrison will bring us a live update from Haiti, where he is right now, and then Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Now more email.
Michelle in San Jose writes, just a note to thank you for all that you do. I recently had a friend call me whose father is terminally ill with cancer. Long story short, her dad has been receiving visits from Jehovah's Witnesses, and she was concerned about what they were telling him, and she asked me for help. So I jumped on your website, search for Jehovah's Witnesses on your new search engine function, and was able to bring up the program from December 17th with Ron Rhodes. It was easy to forward the program to her. I haven't talked to her yet, but I just wanted to send my appreciation for your work. The archives are a wonderful tool for sharing the gospel with our friends, writes Michelle in San Jose, California.
Well, thank you very much. And this is exactly why, and we do love our on-demand listeners. Even if you go back to the old, old archives, we love our on-demand listeners. And it's precisely why we do what we do and why we make sure that what we do gets archived for people to find whenever they need to. And look, I forget half of what we talk about here on the show. I learn it. The guests are very instructive to me. But a couple weeks later, it's all gone out of my head. And there are times when I need to go back and listen to the archive to kind of refresh my memory about what we said. And it's also why we bring you the great variety of guests and topics that we do here on Issues, etc., trying to keep it as broad as possible because we know that the needs out there, people knowing what a Jehovah's Witness teaches, how to respond, all of those things, running the gamut, those needs out there are very, very diverse.
Just got an email that early February you're going to be able to interview Robert A. Schuller, the son of the infamous Robert H. Schuller.
Oh, goody. When are we going to do this?
I think it's February the 3rd.
Oh, good. So we can follow up on our – that was probably 5-6 years ago when we talked with Robert Schuller the first, and that was an interesting conversation. It's a very interesting conversation. He was generous with his time, but he was also very clear that he believed all this talk about sin and shame and the cross was only going to turn people off. He was a very honest man, by the way. I wonder what his son will be like. That'll be interesting to see.
I bet he won't say. You don't think he'll tell us anything why he got ousted out at Crystal Cathedral?
Well, we can always ask, but I seriously doubt he will say. You can always ask. You can always ask.
Bob in Vermont, last Friday, you guys were joking about Facebook. I know there's a lot of inanity there, but were it not for the Jeff Schwartz for President's fan page, I don't know if I would have ever found out about the Holy Tuesday Massacre.
That's really?
Bob in Vermont. That's how he found out we got fired.
By going to your now defunct Jeff Schwartz for President page?
I think I'm bringing it back in light of Scott Brown's Senate victory. I think I got a chance.
Do you?
This time around, yeah.
Okay, you don't have any Cosmo photo spread anything to hide in your past?
Not that I'm aware of.
Right, just those pictures of you with the flock of seagulls haircut standing
right
on the beach.
That's right.
It. If that's all it is, I think you're clear to go.
I think I need an ad with some sock puppets in it. I think that'll put me over the top against President Obama.
Could not hurt. Could not hurt. I'd vote for you. I mean, I would vote for you. Look, people often ask me, when I try to befriend people on Facebook all the time, and they'll say, why are you asking me to be your friend? And sometimes it's because we have a lot of mutual friends. I like making friends. I like it helps promote the show too. No, make no bones about that. And a few people will turn you down because they don't know who you are, don't care for who you are, any of those kind of things. But one thing will always get me to try and befriend you. If you have a baby pictured anywhere in your profile picture, it's irresistible. If you have a kitten or, and these are very rare, if you have a sock puppet or if we have mutual friends. I started out saying we have to have 10 or more mutual friends and then I upped it to 20 and now I'm up to 30. I'm about to push it to 40 because when the longer you stay on, you get a lot of mutual friends that aren't really mutual friends. It's just kind of social networking.
I befriend nobody unless I know them.
Yeah.
It's my thing. That's why I only have about two.
I have the opposite approach. I have the complete opposite approach. You are not cut out for social networking. You're about social niching.
No, I'm about like having real personal physical friendship. I guess that's just old fashioned.
Yeah, that's just old fashioned.
Yeah.
I see. Since I know that's not possible on Facebook, I mean, you have to actually have real interaction with people. Facebook isn't for making real friends. It's for making Facebook friends. And there's a big difference between the two.
As long as it's not your only friends.
Look, I went from having no friends. I mean, you know me. I still have no...
You had Maria.
Well, yes, but she has
Saul,
to be my friend.
Emma.
She's legally
children.
Obligated. They're also... They're
Mom
obligated
and Dad,
by... All
that come. And I think that's it. Maybe Janet come, his wife.
Yes.
Depending on which day of the week it is.
But see, those are all kind of... Well, I would still say I have no real... I mean, these are friends to me, but I would still say I have no real friends.
about Matt Harrison? He's a friend.
Well, that's right. He's a friend to cats, too. Did you know that? Did you see that picture?
Yeah, you talked about it last week on the show.
I know. That's great. And, yeah, he's a real friend.
Randy Asbury, friend or no friend?
I'm not trying to say bad things about the people whom I regard as friends, but
Craig Feichtinger.
I don't have friends
no
like
friend.
Let me say, I don't have friends like you have friends. You have friends, you barbecue together, you play cards,
we're going to a mice race.
You go to a mouse race with Saturday them, whatever night. That is, and you do all of these things with your friends. You socialize. If the standard of friendship is that you actually socialize with these people on a regular basis, I have no friends. I am closer in that sense of the definition of friendship to the lady who sits behind the desk at the Y than I am to any of the people that I've known for years. I am a recluse. I see her more often. I exchange more words with her than I do with some of my closest friends.
Do you know her name?
No, I don't.
I didn't think so. Chris in Lincoln, Nebraska. Please share my thanks with everyone involved with Issues, etc., which is far more than a radio program. Please know God is accomplishing his will through the efforts of your team. Issues, etc. has helped me understand how very fortunate I am to be a member of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Lincoln, Nebraska, where pastors Mark Ebert and Michael Brown faithfully preach and teach both the law and the gospel. In particular, the pastors' roundtables have been wonderfully helpful in growing my understanding of God's revealed word. Additionally, as a regular on-demand listener, I firmly believe I am better equipped to serve my neighbor and witness confidently in the face of many difficult issues that face our world today. I look forward to continuing my Lutheran education while at church and on my walks. How about this idea for a tagline or bumper sticker? Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran. You're listening to Issues, Etc. Thanks for listening, Chris in Lincoln, Nebraska.
That is a great tagline. And when Pastor Cum regains his voice in its full basso profundo, then we will have him in here, record it, and you'll hear it. It's a great tagline. Anybody else have any ideas for taglines? We always want to hear them. We're very happy we can help you out. And again, we do love our on-demand listeners.
I was just trying to pull up some of the new taglines. We're waiting for Pastor Cum to record.
What do you got there? We keep a running tally of these things.
Less laughing, more Jesus.
Good, I like that one.
You canceled the wrong show. Christological, creedal, confessional.
Oh, that's great. I like that one.
Sacramental, historical, liturgical. Lutheran radio in exile. And this is my favorite. Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues, Etc. We got to get Pastor coming here. And then we got this new one to add to it.
Okay, that's good.
Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran. I like that.
Let's get him in here.
You want another email?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Kevin in Indiana. The show continues to improve. I particularly enjoyed the recent episode with Pastor Wolf Miller on decision theology. It was very good. It reminded me very much of several conversations I've had myself. I must confess some envy, though. Pastor Brian gets to go to Germany on that fantastic trip. My wife and I have talked about that before, and it sounds absolutely outstanding, but the finances are just not there right now. Maybe that would be a good idea for a program segment or two if the good pastor would be willing to share some of his experiences in Deutschland. I like Brian, but I don't know if I like him that much. A post, yeah. You know, if he's live from Germany, I think I can be convinced, but I don't know.
I mean, I'd rather just see the pictures, tell you the truth, than
I don't know if I like that either. Well, if as long as Brian's not in the picture, then I agree with you.
I've been on this tour, and the problem was I went with a group. This was when we were with KFUO. I went with a group of people, wonderful people, but I made the mistake of going by myself. My parents came along, but I made the mistake of going by myself and leaving my wife at home, and that was a big mistake because I was pretty much in that sense, I was miserable the entire 10 days, being away from my wife and my kids. They were little, and I enjoyed the tour, but I was in every other respect miserable because I neglected to take my wife along. I did the same thing when I went to Strasbourg a couple summers ago for Dr. Montgomery's academy. I was teaching out there, and I went to Strasbourg for, 7-8 days, and like an idiot, didn't take my wife, and I just can't function that long without my wife around.
Kevin concludes, my envy of the good Pastor Wolf Miller also includes that he has gotten his Issues Etc. t-shirt, and I don't have mine yet, and I signed on the Reformation Club last November. Is our good friend Craig not keeping up with the enormous demand for those things?
We can't blame Craig for this, can we?
No, well, no, we need to. We're waiting for your autographed copies of Christ Have Mercy, every member, buddy, it joins by Pastor Matt Harrison.
Okay,
he's
so
in Haiti right now.
He has yet to sign those books, and I doubt he's signing them down on the streets of Haiti. But when he gets back, we have an email into him. He will sign. He's a good friend. He'll sign them for us, and then we'll get them out to you. We'll be right back. We'll pick the blog of the week after a little bit more email.
The only days are gone, I'm a going home. My baby just hooked me a little.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
We're churchmen, not company men. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Study Bible is the first time in the English language that the Lutheran Church has produced a study Bible to this extent.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Paul McCain, with his thoughts on the new Lutheran Study Bible.
It's entirely from scratch, using all original content, features that every Christian will love and cherish. It has what I think is the most important thing of all, a rich devotional quality to it that helps us understand when we are reading the Word of God, we are reading the mind of God and hearing His Word for us, and we respond to Him and pray, praise, and thanksgiving all through Jesus Christ our Lord. We are really excited about this Bible.
Enrich your devotional life through word and prayer with the new Lutheran Study Bible. Check it out at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can buy the Lutheran Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, the Lutheran Study Bible.
Wait, oh yes, wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait,
wait, hey, 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 Mr. Postman.
Mr. Postman, look at
10 more minutes in this hour. After some more email, we'll pick our Issues Etc. blog posts of the week.
This just came in on my Facebook page, which I have, you know, just 10 friends or something. Ed writes, and I remember listening to Ed when we did a confessional worldview seminar up in Trago, Wisconsin, when we first met Ed. And he says, listening to the show, I'm glad to be on your friend list, Jeff. Sounds exclusive. I need to reduce my number of unknown friends and clean up the account. It's gotten overblown. Agreed.
Nonsense.
Edwin.
Nonsense. I think we should be promiscuous with our friendships on Facebook. I think we should be profligate, if that word fits. I don't even know if it does. I'll look it up later. It just sounded like it fit. Promiscuity, Facebook promiscuity, is the only kind of promiscuity I would advocate. I mean, otherwise, look, you can't make real friends in this kind of context. They're virtual. So if you're going, make the most of what you've got there. And then save your real friends for real life, if you happen to have any.
Mark in Brighton, Illinois, this is in regard to your show last Friday. You reviewed the movie Avatar and then had a discussion on the situation in Haiti. I thought the juxtaposition of the two was incredible and was incredibly ironic. Avatar is fantasy, Haiti is real. In Avatar, nature is wonderfully benign. In Haiti, nature is part of fallen creation. In Avatar, the Marines are bad. In Haiti, where order has broken down, Marines are a godsend. In Avatar, technology is bad. Although bows and arrows, which are a technological advantage over rocks and sticks, are good, the bows used by the Mongols are technological marvels. In Haiti, technology is a godsend. I'm not saying that technology can't be used in a sinful fashion, mind you, but on the whole, I will take modern medicine over the medicine man every time. Again, I understand that movies can be about enjoyment, although I have read that the director of Avatar has stated that one of the points of the movie is that ecological terrorism is a good thing. I guess one thing that continually strikes me about these types of movies is that man is a sinner, salvation is extra nos, and that while we may know, we don't have the answer, we are like rats in a maze trying to find some answer other than Christ. We tried to find the answer to our situation ourselves. When that fails, the government. When that fails, in man, in nature. When that fails, Eastern philosophy. When that fails, the aliens. Somewhere, somehow, we try to find the answer to our fallen, sinful nature, which we know lies outside of ourselves in something other than Christ. I really wonder if this isn't the answer for the popularity of aliens. They're going to provide us an answer so that we can find peace. Great email, and thanks for listening, Mark in Brighton, Illinois.
Oh, I'm sure if you asked guys like Paul Copan and others about the religious element and the fascination with extraterrestrial life, they would affirm that it has a strong religious bent, has a strong religious hope or faith attached to it, and especially those who've kind of got off the deep end with it, believing in alien encounters of all kinds. Some of them, I'm thinking of, now the name escapes me, so I can't think of him. Those who believe that they've had alien encounters often will claim that that's precisely what's happening. The aliens are here to usher in a new kind of messianic age, usually has something to do with dispensing with all the gods of our old ways of thinking and accepting a new kind of God is the universe view. Explicitly religious in a lot of cases.
Tim in Normal, Illinois writes, "This note and the donation I just made, thank you very much, Tim, is long overdue. I have been a regular listener since you were on KFUO, except for the unfortunate silent months. Issues Etc. has been a tremendous encouragement to me. My faith has grown because of Issues Etc. Thank you. Long story short, God brought me to confessional Lutheranism out of a background of devout fundamentalism / evangelicalism background. My first encounter with the theological aspects of confessional Lutheranism was as a graduate student at the University of Nebraska, where in a class on church music at a secular university, my professor made a comment about how the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Lutherans were likely the most closely grounded to the theology and practice of the early church. That was about 25 years ago, and that comment started me on a journey that changed my life. Issues Etc. has been a huge part of my journey," writes Tim in Normal, Illinois.
Well, Tim, thank you very much. That is very nice to hear, and welcome to the Reformation. Sometimes it takes that long, 25 years. God is incredibly patient in bringing us to a knowledge of the truth. Very glad to have been a small part of it. Thank you very much for your comment.
Okay, I guess I'll read another one, since you didn't read your screen. Stephen,
oh, sorry.
First of all, thanks for the email. These are all, I don't want to see, for some reason we got lots of positive praise this week. I don't know. Epiphany joy, I suppose.
It's the end of the year. People are thinking about us, remembering us. And so,
okay. Stephen at DeSoto, Missouri. Thanks, Todd, for the article on legalism and license in the Issues Etc. Journal. Very, very good. And thanks, the Wolfman, for his article, too. I came out of the ALC, the American Lutheran Church, before it was the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and my experience was much the same. Recently, a very intelligent Baptist, a teacher in his congregation, came to our congregation. He said he had been listening to Issues Etc. He said he's been a strict Calvinist, but Lutheran teaching is shaking his world. He likes what he is hearing. I gave him Pieper's Dogmatics, and he's been reading it front to back. He now realizes he's Lutheran in a Baptist/Calvinist church. Leaving means suffering because his wife and his family have no intention of leaving their church. Again, this guy's a teacher in the biggest Baptist church in town. He's challenging all of his pastors and teachers. They can't counter him. He's becoming dangerous. I think we'll see him in the Lutheran church in time. I wouldn't doubt the Lord is grooming him for the seminary, but all in good time. Again, thank you, Todd, Jeff, and Issues Etc., and Craig, for the truth you are proclaiming. God is using the truth over the airwaves and through the internet to create true faith. When and where he pleases, writes Stephen in Missouri.
Well, Stephen, thank you very much, and I'm glad you put in that last part. When and where he pleases, that's how it works. Happens when, happens where he pleases, and we know without a doubt how it happens. It always happens by the power of the gospel and the gospel alone.